Listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We appreciate that, and we think you're going to appreciate the information we've got coming your way. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman is your producer, and we are rolling along on a Monday with Elise Glink. She normally starts us off. This week is no exception, and a lot to talk about. Elise, how are you today?
I'm fine, thanks, John. How are you?
Pretty good. We've been visiting with various guests and been listening to the newsroom and Orion as well talk about the markets. Seems like a couple of things are driving this, maybe the lack of a stimulus and, for that matter, the surge in Europe and in the United States of COVID-19. Is that your read, too, Elise?
Yeah, I think those two things are part of what's going on. I also think there are a whole bunch of leaked files today which have shown that the banking industry, all the big names that you know and love and supposedly trust, are actually involved with some possible suspicious transactions, and I think that's causing some concerns. And it's not just Deutsche Bank, but J.P. Morgan Chase, HSBC, Barclays, and others.
I don't know what to make of that. I've read things about Deutsche Bank in the past that made me kind of raise my eyebrow a little bit. But in the long run, especially with the sort of guarantees you have in the United States, you think you can trust banks to be doing right. But the belief here is that they were laundering money or knew that that money was illicitly got and didn't seem to do anything about it.
That's right. And it actually, these are, I should tell everybody that this is part of a collection of files that belong to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN, which is often how it's known. And what it details is 20 years worth of movements and financial transactions of money from 2000 all the way through 2017. And it shows that these different banks that we talked about were facilitating and engaging with the movement of criminal money. What's interesting is that it's even after suspicions have been raised that this money may not have been real, legitimate, and the banks kept working with it anyway, and they're not really supposed to do that.
Yeah, I won't ask you to comment too deeply on it, but I don't know how much you know about the obligations banks have, right? That is, if I make a deposit, how much obligation do they have to know where that money came from, how legitimate it is?
Well, the Patriot Act, which came through right after 2001, requires when you go and you make deposits in excess of $5,000 and $10,000 that the bank sort of certifies where that money comes from and how it goes. But in some cases, there were $80 million Ponzi schemes to move money all around the world. There was fraudster money that was moved in 2013 and 2014 from the U.S. to Hong Kong, even though that particular bank that was working on it, or the couple of different banks, had promised to clamp down on it. And it just, what it does, and my point here, John, and I'm sure you'll want to talk more about this, is in a world where trust is getting eroded, you like to think that you're dealing with a bank, your money, it's safe, and you can trust these institutions, and perhaps that might be a little misplaced.
It's 12:14. Stay right there. Elise Glink. Remember, you can always find her stuff, too, at thinkglink.com. We're talking with Elise Glink, thinkglink.com, about the markets. And also, let's talk about this company that you know more about than I do, Nikola Stock. What's happening here, and what do they even do?
Right. So Nikola Motors is a company that makes electric vehicles, trucks mostly, although they're also working on doing some vehicles for the armed forces. And what they've done is very, very interesting. They're moving, obviously it's like Tesla, but they're doing trucks, and a lot of their buyers are in Europe for these trucks. And these trucks are like huge, massive delivery trucks or that you would see, like 18-wheelers. And they've just done a big deal with GM in the United States as well. And so out of the blue, one of the short sellers accused them of actually faking out their investors, and that they created a commercial or an investor. It's not really a commercial because it didn't air on television, but it was a video that was shown to investors to show them what the abilities of the company were and were going to be a startup, but they have, like, a lot of employees and they've raised billions of dollars.
Okay, so what about that?
So what happened was the short seller said, hey, you're faking us out, and so their stock is down. They went public just a few weeks ago, and now their stock is already down 20% today. And so this is a very, very serious accusation about that basically says that the founder, who has just stepped down today as chairman of the board from this company that he started, that so he can fight these accusations. This is a very, very strange going public story. You don't normally hear that a founder of a brand-new successful company like this has been faking everybody out.
Right, but that's the accusation. That's the charge in this report. But he's not admitting to wrongdoing, simply says this is what's best for the company. At least that's the way I read it. Is that your
view? Correct. He's not admitting to wrongdoing. In fact, he said he is stepping down so that he can fully fight what he calls baseless charges. I will say what's interesting is I happen to know one of the people in HR at that company, and in the end of January, beginning of February, they're based in Phoenix, Scottsdale area. And I went to see my friend, and he gave me a tour of their company, which was really interesting. And I got a chance to see and even sit in some of the trucks that they had built. We didn't take them out for a spin, but they were sitting on the floor. I was not allowed into the research and development lab, which was also on display. I could see people working there, but I wasn't allowed to go in there. They, as you can imagine, limit visitors tightly. But they were, they are supposed to build a factory and hire up to 2,000 people in the Arizona, Phoenix, Scottsdale area starting next year mm-hmm. to build these large-scale trucks and cars.
Well, it would seem to me maybe they misrepresented themselves to investors, which is obviously a big no-no. It does seem like there is a market for that, though, right? Electric vehicles, electric service vehicles.
Yeah, there's no question that there is, and certainly, you know, one of the reasons that GM did a multi-billion dollar investment in the company is that they also think that that's very real, and they want to be a part of it, and this is their way to get in and compete. There's a lot of momentum behind this company, and so for investors that where it just went public, and immediately the stock bounced up, it's now down fairly significantly from its high, but it's just again another story of, you know, who do you trust in the financial market? I think that the question of trust is a very important one right now for across the board.
Yeah, it seems to be today. Moody's has a back to normal index. I presume that's a new index.
I think it is. I think it's hard for all of us to understand exactly what, you know, is going to be normal and how that's going to play going forward. But we're going to have to see whether that gets everybody back to normal or not.
The number is 76, so I'm just reading at CNN.com. It says here that let me just find the number here. The Back to Normal Index, created by CNN Business and Moody's Analytics, estimates that as of last week, the economy was operating at about 76% of where it was before the pandemic. I guess if you're a person who likes the glass half full, that sounds pretty good. Whatever the economy was, and whatever that means, we're at 76% of that. To me, that sounds better than 50%.
Yeah, I think that 76 or 78% is fantastic. I think the last 20% is going to be pretty hard. You know, we are still down about somewhere, depending on how you count, 9 and 11 million jobs from where we were in February. We've rolled that all the way back to basically all of the jobs that were created during President Trump's term have disappeared. I don't know if it's those specific jobs, but in terms of the total number, which is how the Fed measures it, it's rolled all the way back to where we were at the end of 2015. And so back to normal, in my mind, would be getting us to where we were, where the unemployment rate was pretty much as low to the bottom as I've ever seen, which is like around 3.5%.
Yeah.
And we're at about 8.5% now. What I'd really like to see, though, is the bottom half of the economy continue to pick up, I think there's some concerns now that we're going to start to see white-collar jobs disappear. And personally, I'm interested in what's going to happen. I think maybe everybody's forgotten, but September 30th, I believe, is when the federal student loan debt moratorium is lifted, the forbearance that everybody was sort of put in automatically. Now, they talked about extending it. I don't think that that has been officially done, although I could be wrong about that. So much news in so little time. But they, once we start seeing, I think, the effects of all the extra money that people put away when they were getting the $600 extra in unemployment, a lot of that money went into savings and in paying bills. I'm very interested to see what's going to happen over the next few quarters as people who don't have money use up whatever available resources they have and what happens to their bills after that, especially if more people start to lose their job at the state and local level.
You mentioned student loans. Betsy DeVos from the Department of Education today announced that they're going to change the way student loans are serviced. There's five organizations that will handle the student debt, and that's actually a consolidation or a streamlining on their platform, they say. But I shared notes today with Ray Kaplan, who's an attorney who comes on a lot of our shows and talks about student loan servicing. And she says this is just going to be a nightmare for people. We're going to talk about that tomorrow or the next day on my show. And that is, how much money do you owe? Who do you owe it to? What's the best way to manage that money? And what happens to the forbearance that some people have been enjoying? So there's a lot of moving parts there.
So there's a Chicago-based company that was very involved in getting people who had become delinquent in paying their student loan debt back current. And that company had about 400 or 500 employees. And at the end of last year, something that did not get a lot of publicity is that Betsy DeVos decided that all the companies that were involved in getting student loan borrowers back to current on their student loans, that she was going to swap all of those out, even the one in Chicago that was very, very successful, and she was going to put in different companies to do it. And I think we should all be watching very carefully what happens now with the Department of Education and these student loans and which companies get the business and who they're related to, who the founders of those companies are related to, and how they actually know people at the Department of Education under Betsy DeVos. And while I have not looked as deeply into the servicing contracts, I think the same thing ought to be looked at.
Huge changes are coming to student loan servicing, according to Forbes.com. If you know someone who has a student loan, be listening tomorrow. We'll talk more about that. It's nice to talk to you today, Elise. Thanks for your help.
You're welcome. Talk to you soon, John.
Catherine Davis joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's talk a little bit about, well, I want to continue a conversation we've been having, Catherine. You're the associate editor at Chicago Inno. Visit ChicagoInno.com. How are you, Catherine?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
Good. Just a moment ago, we were talking with Elise Glink, and I think I will later this week with a different guest, Ray Kaplan, about student debt. And you all have a story about this as well, and a Chicago-based company that helps people eliminate student debt. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So there is a startup in town called Changed. And, you know, founded by two local guys that basically want to help people pay off their student loans with every purchase. So the way the app works is that it connects to your bank account, tracks every purchase you make, and rounds up to the nearest dollar, and that extra change is then automatically put towards your student loan balance. So the idea is that, you know, you're just sort of passively contributing to those student loan payments. And helping to pay down that debt.
I'm paying my student loan. I'm not rounding up for a charitable cause. I'm simply rounding up and paying off my loan.
Yes, you're paying off your personal loan.
I see. Okay, so then what's in it for them? How do they make money on it?
Yeah, so they charge users $1 per month to use the service. So not too expensive for, you know, the average person. And, you know, the interesting thing about this startup is that they appeared on Shark Tank maybe a couple years ago now. And, you know, they received a $250,000 investment from Mark Cuban. And that episode was really sort of the launching point for their business. You know, of course, usership skyrocketed after that. It's been interesting to see them grow. And so, you know, the reason we wrote about them last week is because because they have now helped borrowers pay back $10 million in student loans. You know, the founder was telling me that some of their users have completely eliminated their debt using Changed. You know, of course, these people are making their normal monthly payments, and then they use Changed kind of on top of that to help it go faster.
Yeah. So maybe over the course of a month, if I make 10, 20, 30, what, credit card payments? Is that what it would be?
Yeah. Yes. You can track a debit card, a credit card, whatever you're using.
So my Chipotle order of $12.50 now actually deducts $13. And while I was having that taco and didn't even think about it, 50 cents went towards my debt. I guess if I use that enough, that helps. Does it matter? Does that make a big enough difference to make it worth my while?
So the company is saying that it, you know, it gets a lot of good feedback from its users that they have noticed, you know, a significant decrease in their debt. Obviously, it depends on how much you're spending and how frequently you're buying things. But you know, I think kind of in our economy, with you know, the average millennial having you know $15,000 worth of debt, anything you can do to help pay that down quicker is something you're interested in. Debt is really keeping, you know, people from moving forward with their lives or buying homes, having children, and debt is a huge part of people's lives at this point.
Aris wants to reduce COVID-19 transmission with its copper-coated phone cases. What's that?
That's right. So this is a startup founded by three Evanston natives. And they have come up with a copper coating solution that helps to destroy bacteria. So, you know, before this company was even founded, you know, researchers have been seeing evidence in the fact that, you know, copper is a way to penetrate bacteria molecules and break them down. It's been shown to eliminate pathogens such as H1N1 and MERS in just minutes. So, you know, these founders are kind of taking that research and now applying it to a phone case because, you know, our phone is one of the things that we touch probably the most throughout our day. The idea is that it can hold a lot of bacteria, so why not have a phone case that can eliminate it?
I guess they have to be careful about the claims they make with a product like that, huh?
Right, yeah, absolutely. These are, you know, all the claims that they are advertising, but there is research to support the fact that copper can reduce pathogens.
So how do I buy one of those? I mean, is that available at Aris.com or something like that?
That's right. You can buy one on their website for about $40, and they come in several iPhone and Galaxy models.
A-E-R-I-S. Aris is the name of that company with some Chicago entrepreneurs. And finally, talk to me about the scooter business in Chicago. What's going on here?
Yeah, so, you know, Chicago is in the middle of its second electric scooter pilot, and there's a ton more scooters here than there were last summer. There's like four times as many. There's 10,000 scooters around the city and in most neighborhoods. The downtown business district is, you know, not allowing scooters, but north side neighborhoods, west side, south side neighborhoods, all are seeing scooters. But, you know, ridership is kind of on par with the last year. The demand is not quite as high as I think the city envisioned it being. And, you know, the big takeaway is that it just kind of reflects the changing commuting patterns amid the pandemic. I don't think people are going as many places, need to use scooters. The other thing is I'm sure there is, you know, some anxiety about sharing the scooters with strangers, and is it a way to contract COVID? So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the city kind of responds to this, if they perhaps minimize or, you know, decrease the size of the pilot, just saying, well, if there's not demand for all these scooters, we don't need them all sitting around on the streets. But time will tell.
Okay, I got an idea. They should take the copper coating guys and put a copper coating on the handlebars of the scooters. So that when
genius.
That's what I do.
That's your startup idea.
No, it is not. Catherine Davis, Associate Editor, Chicago Inno. Thank you, Catherine.
Thanks, John.
Into the WGN Radio Newsroom. Steve Grzanich has still more business news.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. One out of eight jobs in Illinois disappeared because of the COVID shutdown. Crane's reports 7% of them still haven't been recovered as of the end of August. That accounts for about 426,000 jobs. That is better than the national decline of about 7.6%. The pandemic and resulting drop-off in air passenger traffic could impact the timing of the $8.5 billion terminal revamp at O'Hare Airport. Documents filed by the city as part of the process to refinance O'Hare debt reportedly show city officials are now assessing the timing of the terminal area project. According to Cranes, the documents show the current 2028 completion date is now subject to change. Airline traffic is projected to stall until the middle of the decade because of COVID. Lawry's, the prime rib restaurant, will close at the end of the year. Lawry's has been in business in Chicago for 46 years on Ontario Street, just off Michigan Avenue. Loss of business because of the pandemic, unrest downtown, and an expiring building lease are the reasons for the closure. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's pick it up here. Amy, how are you today? I'm going to hit this button here. I hope I don't disconnect you. Right, Pete? Now you're on the air. Hi, Amy.
There we are. Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Let's talk a little bit about the marijuana business. The governor had something to say about that. Was that today or this weekend? What's going on here?
Well, so here's the situation. So the whole thing of passing the legislation to legalize recreational adult use marijuana was that it was aiming to make the marijuana industry more inclusive. It's largely white and male. And so a whole big part of this was the social equity piece. And that's been really, really paid very close attention to throughout this process. Most of the people who launched on day one were existing companies that have been around a while, and with the plan that these equity applicants would be in the lottery a little bit later. Well, once the eligibility announcement came for who would be eligible to be in that lottery, a couple of lawsuits surfaced pretty quickly because some applicants said, hey, we checked all the boxes, we did all the things, why are we not eligible? What these other ones are? And they've alleged that some of the people who moved to the next round had some big political connections or had, you know, some kind of VIP people that were really well connected on their boards. And so they're alleging that, hey, this is not fair. So what the governor did is he said, all right, before the lottery takes place, we will take the necessary time to ensure that the process is fair and equitable. He did not say exactly when that's going to be, but signs are pointing to it's probably going to be later than September, right? So initially it was going to be, you know, a lot sooner, but I think they're going to push that back in order to just say, like, hey, we need to make sure we're doing this right. We need to make sure that, you know, all the ducks in a row and everything is fair and everybody has an equal shot to this, because that was kind of the whole point of rolling this out in the first place. So I think it's going to be interesting to see when that date is set. That's going to be a thing to watch for sure. But also, how much transparency is around that process of, okay, how is the state going to describe, here are the people that move to the next round and why, and in order to deal with this?
There were hundreds of applicants, right?
Yeah. Tons and tons of applicants. And the social equity applicant piece of it, you know, a lot of conversation was had about that, because it was really about, you know, anybody from a community that was disproportionately impacted by the so-called war on drugs. This was kind of a way to, hey, let's help people from those communities who've been impacted by it get out from under that and get a foothold in this business and get some funding and get access and, you know, get access to a business that otherwise, you know, the big companies might have already kind of dominated. So it's a really important piece, and it was also a very important piece of the legislation passing. So I think a lot of eyes are on Pritzker right now to make sure it's done right and well. I think, you know, we'll probably see that new date set really soon, but it seems like that can't be set until they kind of iron out that process and make sure there isn't any kind of favoritism going on or that it's not weighted or anything like that.
The election's around the corner. What is it, 42 days? It's 6 times 7. 42 days, I think, are away from the election. So as a result, I never thought about this, but there are more IPOs going up, right?
Yeah, this is a thing that kind of happens. We see there's sort of a window. Like by mid-October, not many people are going to be probably careening towards an IPO for their company. But especially this year, there's a lot of uncertainty around the election this year. There always is uncertainty around every presidential election ever. But this year, there's a lot of conversations being had across political spectrums. So after about October, that window kind of shuts for IPOs. So we're seeing this kind of flurry of them. I think we're going to see a lot more probably hit in the next couple of weeks before as we move into October for sure. But I think the one that, like, a lot of economists are pointing to is kind of what's going to happen with Airbnb. That's sort of a big one. And, you know, the one called it, like, the elephant in the room, right? And DoorDash is another one. Really big companies. The financial arm of the e-commerce Alibaba, right? They're looking to go public in Hong Kong and Shanghai before year's end. So it's kind of this big rush because it's not just U.S. economy that I think there's a lot to get accomplished before that, before you get into kind of everybody focus on the election zone.
Yeah.
So I anticipate we will see a lot more, a lot more IPOs. But also, you know, the ones we've seen are pretty interesting. Cloud companies, Snowflake and JFrog, that was this week. Friday's gaming tools developer, Unity Software. So it's kind of speaking to where we are in the moment, too, right? Cloud companies, a lot of people are leaning on that. Technology companies, really important. And gaming tools, right? That's the thing a lot of people are using right now. So well, I think that is something to watch a lot.
I only have time for the headline here, Amy, but Byline Bank shuttering 20% of its branches. Half of its branches are in Chicago now, and they're going to close half of their stores, huh? Half of their locations.
That's right. That's right. They're going to shutter 20% of its branch network. They haven't said which ones yet because they want to let customers know. This really is just emerging today. But it's significant because they're the first local bank to take such aggressive measures on their physical locations. They say this is about, hey, during the pandemic, that accelerated some consumer behavior. More people want more online tools and less in-person tools. So that's what they say they are answering, that call right there.
Amy Guth following a lot of business for us. Thanks for your time today, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.